Blog Talk Radio.
So,
everybody in internet land, I'm Jason Ophir, and welcome to another episode of Paranormal Horizons. And I'm accompanied by our co-host, Sherry Pang. Sherry, how's it going? Did you have a good week?
Very good. Hi, Jason. Really good. Very, very good. Been very relaxing and just busy at the same time. So, yes, I'm trying to strive for some balance, and I think I'm achieving it. So that's where I'm at.
Awesome. Well, I've been busy at work as usual and always look forward to the weekend. And I understand you have a great guest lined up tonight, and I see that she's in queue. Maybe you can just tell us a little bit about our guest that we have on.
Okay. Our tonight's guest is, her name is Elaine Davison. I met her last year at the Oregon Ghost Conference, and she's a wonderful gal. Really like her energy. And it was, had the privilege of giving her a psychic mediumship reading. But anyway, I would like to have her on the show. And she's very well versed in paranormal investigations. She is with Western Oregon Organization Paranormal Investigators. And she also is the author of a book called The Investigator's Guide to Paranormal Safety. So I'm really excited to have her on the show and like to know more about what she has, and we're just going to put her on.
Great. Yeah, it's been a long time since we've talked about paranormal safety. And, you know, with all the shows out there and everybody kind of becoming an amateur paranormal investigator, I think it's important to talk about paranormal safety, because I, like I told you at the end of the last show, I know some people that have gotten in all sorts of trouble. So I see that she's in queue, and we'll bring her on right now. Hi, Elaine. Welcome to Paranormal Horizons.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Hi, Elaine. It's
great to have you on.
Hi, Terry.
So, Sherry kind of gave a brief intro. Did you want to expand a little bit on that and let our listeners know a little bit more about what you do and how you got into the paranormal?
Well, I kind of got into the paranormal because I was trying to understand what was going on with me. I grew up in a house. From the time I was born until the time I was about 13, and it was a very interesting house. It was an old farmhouse built in the late 1800s. And I would be tucked in at night. Now, my parents never tucked me in. But every night, somebody would come in, tuck me in, and give me a kiss on the forehead. And that always bothered me. It was like, Mom said she didn't do it, but I swear it happens every night. And it did. Well, it wasn't until about 10 years ago I found out that my mom's great-great-uncle built the house. Now, my mom didn't even know that. And he had 5 kids, 4 of which died in that house. And so did his wife. And that was during a Spanish flu epidemic.
Oh, wow.
So now I'm kind of like, yeah, was she taking care of me because I was a relative?
Did you ever, like, see the person that, or the entity or whatever that was doing that, or you would just feel it?
I saw her in the shadow. It would, you know, if a car was coming down the street. Well, we lived on the little country road. So if I saw a car was coming down the road, I could see her shadow as she walked toward me.
If that
and it never
to me,
scared me.
Well, if that happened to me, I'd probably never go to sleep again.
that it happened every day from the time I was born.
Yeah, I guess you would get used to it. But,
I mean, I don't think I knew any different until we moved out of that house, and then it stopped abruptly. And then it was like, well, why did it stop? Well, we moved to a different house.
Hmm. Well, I was going to say, so that's where it started, your interest in the paranormal?
Yeah.
And so we talked about paranormal safety a little bit on this show a long time ago, and I think it's kind of a good thing to discuss because, as I briefly mentioned when we opened the show, that there's these ghost shows are everywhere, and I know that there's these paranormal groups are popping up all over the place, and I've talked to just about every corner of the paranormal world over the years and have heard all sorts of stories from people having entity attachments to demonic attacks to physical injuries to accusations of theft. And so I just kind of want to give you the floor and kind of tell us and our listeners a little bit about paranormal safety and some of the risks out there if people choose to do that as a hobby.
Okay. I'll start with why I got involved with this. In 2012, my team went into a house. The house was built in 1950 out of recycled lumber from a military fort camp adair here in Oregon that was being torn down. The house, you know, five investigators went into that house. They had four adults, three large dogs, two cats, and a ferret living there. Now, the house had been remodeled in 1960, and this was 2012. That was the last remodel on the house. It still has the carpet from the 1960 remodel. And we are sure, whether it needed it or not, they vacuumed once a year. And the guys turned on the IR cameras, and one of them even made the comment, "It looks like it's snowing in here." But, of course, you know, we're dumb investigators. We didn't think anything of it. It's just us. The next day, all five investigators woke up sick. We stayed sick until October. We went into that house on May 5th. We were still sick in October. It wasn't until one doctor put one of our team members on a antifungal medicine for histoplasmosis. He said, you know, you shouldn't have it. You're not, you know, it's called caveman's disease. But you know, we've tried everything else. Let's try this. Within 48 hours, she was better.
Wow,
that's
a long
time. We all ran to the doctors. It was, you know, we'd go to the doctors and they would treat us for bronchitis. Well, bronchitis is a symptom. We weren't getting treated for what we had. But how would the doctor know, you know, if we spelunkers and in caves all the time, they might have guessed, but not something that a doctor would even think to put us on. That's what got me started.
So it's like fungus spores? They just go into the lungs and grow? Or I don't know anything about it.
Histoplasmosis, quite often, most people would get it from bat guano. Any kind of animal fecal matter, a special kind of fungus does grow on it. When that gets kicked up into the air, that's what causes the fungal disease in the lung.
Oh, wow.
So bats are especially, you know, the typical one. Ours was probably cats and dogs and ferrets, but you can get it from, you know, lots of things.
Is that a serious condition if left untreated? I mean, you guys had that for months.
Kill people.
Does it permanently damage the lungs, or is it totally recoverable once you have it treated?
It depends. The youngest member of our team has no lung damage. One of our team members, now, the person also happened to be a smoker. So they're not sure, but there was a significant decrease in the lung capacity.
So I guess the moral of the story is, if anybody out there starts, you know, doing urban exploration or paranormal investigating, they should probably take a mask.
Well, our team has a kind of a rule of thumb. If you turn on the IR cameras and it looks like it's snowing, we do put on a mask. And an N95 mask is what is typically preferred for that. But even then, if somebody has, like, emphysema or the start of it or diminished lung capacity, like we have a team member, she left the team because of this, actually, to be honest, has diminished lung capacity, you can, or a heart condition, you can't wear those masks. It's actually dangerous to wear those masks. So you got to, you know, kind of look at each investigation. We've done houses where there's great amounts of mold, and we do have a member of our team at the time that had a heart condition. It was like, we have to wear masks in here. We love you dearly. Help us do the review. You cannot go in that place. So, you know, we look at each case. You don't want to jeopardize a team member. It's just not worth it.
Elaine, do you think that a lot of these paranormal teams that are on TV and everything, they don't advertise that kind of thing, but do you think those kind of mishaps or problems happen in these teams that they don't talk about when they're on air or anything?
I know for a fact they do.
Okay.
Due to confidentiality, I cannot give names, but I actually had a doctor contact me, and it was regarding a TV show personality, and that person was, at the time, and there was rumors that the person had gotten very, very sick. Of course, the network basically says, oh, it had nothing to do with, you know, the show or any of the investigations. However, his doctor at the time was very concerned that it was, and the condition the person had is one that I have in my safety pamphlet. So I can't say, you know, the hard part about it is, you know, when the CDC or a health department, let's say there's a meningitis, which would not be paranormal at all, say there's a meningitis outbreak, they will say, you know, in Eugene a few years ago, the WOW concert, several people got meningitis. Now, if you go back and read all the statements that they made, it was like, there's a meningitis outbreak, and these three people attended that conference. They've been very careful never to say they got it there, because what if they were standing in line at 7-Eleven and got before the concert or after the concert? They could have gotten it there.
That's true. Some of these
diseases, it's very hard to say where you got it. Now, if you got histoplasmosis and you've been running through a building with bat guano, the odds are you got it in the building with the bat guano. But a doctor will never say you definitely did. And there's a reason for that. There's liability issues. So what I try to tell people is, I cannot tell you 100% sure, but when you go into these places, you're exposing yourself to these diseases. Did I say that right?
Yeah, I've done a lot of paranormal investigations, but most of it was people's homes, and I spent a lot of time in basements, and I never thought of wearing any kind of mask in a basement. But is that even a risk in an occupied home, for example, in their basements, or is that pretty much just decrepit, abandoned buildings where people have to be concerned about that?
A person in Colorado was in a guy's basement, and that place was tested after the fact. It was a dirty, dusty basement. There were mice in there, and he got hantavirus. So, yeah, people's homes can be dangerous.
Mm.
Not just from mold, must, and dildo, but there was a home in Michigan. A team was going in and out during the day. Nice, you know, spring day. They'd been going in and out of the basement. The basement was supposedly haunted. And the last two team members of the night went in there, you know, as it got dark. And, of course, it was near Lake Michigan, so it got cold really fast. They were down there, and the furnace kept kicking on.
Hmm.
Not typically a problem. However, I did get to listen to the audio that was running. They were down there for less than 20 minutes total. They were supposed to be down there for 10 to 15 minutes and then go back upstairs because they were calling it a night. Well, they went down there and they were talking, and within 5 minutes they sounded drunk. At about the 10-minute mark, the girl said, "I'm not feeling right. Let's get out of here. Something's wrong." She stood up. You could hear her fall over. The guy that was with her got really excited because she just passed out, and then he passed out. It was carbon monoxide. And luckily, it was the end of the night. They didn't show up. Somebody went looking for them, who happened to be an EMT, and realized really quick. Now, the family lived on the first floor. They never really went in the basement. They had carbon monoxide detectors on the first floor and on the second floor, but not in the basement.
Hmm.
You know, it just occurred to me that I actually, and I don't know why this didn't occur to me earlier, I actually live in somebody's basement. And I got them to purchase a carbon monoxide detector because I was smart enough to know that was a risk because they have, there's a furnace down here. But, I don't think a lot of people think of that.
Elaine, does that make a difference whether the house is older or newer? I mean, like, you know, we live in Oregon. We have mold all over. And is it, you know, specifically for older places or older condemned buildings, or could it be anywhere that you can contract this by doing when you're doing a paranormal investigation?
It can be anywhere.
That's what I thought. Okay.
I mean, there's like over 30,000 different types of mold. Only three are toxic. All of them can irritate you. But it's very specific funguses that can cause, like, histoplasmosis and lung infections. Granted, they're very rare, but, you know, anybody that has a cat that doesn't use the litter box could get it. I had never thought about it, but when I was researching for the pamphlet and I was learning about histoplasmosis, which is basically what I had, one of the doctors goes, "That's why we tell pregnant women not to empty the litter box." And I'd heard that, but I really didn't understand why. And it's because pregnant women, especially because they need the greater lung capacity because they're breathing for two, are more susceptible to stuff like that. And it was like, wow, I didn't even realize.
And I know with cat litter boxes, there's something called Toxoplasmosis gondii, which is one of those things that a lot of people carry it, like as much as 75% of people. And you get that from cat litter boxes. And it's a really weird, I don't remember if it's a fungus or not, but it actually like is kind of a mind control thing. It changes people's behavior when it gets out of control in their body.
It can cause.
You said 75% of the people have that?
Something like that, a huge percentage.
Wow.
Well, they carry it, but it's not a problem. But in some people, it becomes a problem, and it's known to cause personality changes and all sorts of weird stuff. So.
That's interesting. Wow. Thank you.
So, again, it's one of those things that you just don't really think about, you know, when you have cats. And we have four cats here, so... You know, but there's all sorts of risks that out there that you just aren't aware of.
Yeah, we've got people crawl under houses. More and more teams are not going under houses for various reasons, but I've heard several teams that have crawled under houses. If anybody's scared of spiders, they might not want to listen for the next few minutes. There was a guy when I was researching the pamphlet I had gotten in touch with through a doctor. Several doctors actually helped, you know, find people that they knew about and put us in contact when I was researching. I got to meet this gentleman. His name is Martin, and that is his real name, and I only use his first name. Martin, when before he got sick, he was an avid Ironman competition person. So triathlon, that was just his life. He was on a paranormal team, and by his own admission, he seemed at times to think he was invincible. Well, they were doing an investigation, and you could hear something it sounded like under the house. So he decided during the investigation to crawl under the house. Well, he crawled in, didn't find anything but a few loose pipes, and thought, you know, somebody was running water. That knocking sound is probably a loose pipe, and he found a couple of loose pipes. So confident with what he discovered and, you know, able to rule out stuff, he crawls back out. Several of his teammates were out there, and they helped dust him off. Well, about an hour later, he starts noticing all these little welts. He goes, great, I crawled through something that I'm allergic to. He went home. The best thing he did was take his clothes off and put them right in the washing machine, and then he went and took a shower. The next morning, he wakes up, and he's got welts even more. His wife's going, okay, you're going to urgent care. She puts him in the car, takes him to urgent care. Urgent care checks him out and says, well, yep, here's some Benadryl. Feel better in the morning. Sends him home. Well, the next morning he wakes up and he's actually having problems breathing.
Oh, wow.
And his wife is like going, oh, heck no. Takes him straight to the emergency room. Good thing she took him to the emergency room. They'd been there for about 20 minutes. 20 minutes in, he has a major heart attack. Now, keep in mind, this is Mr. Healthy that doesn't eat bad food, you know, fried food's the devil kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just had a massive heart attack. And his wife was just like, I can't believe this is happening. Well, the CDC did get called in on that. And they came out. They were there very quickly, from what I understand. And as they were walking through the door, apparently he had yet another heart attack. Everybody's like, what the heck? Well, during the investigation, which they did bring an investigator, he had her walk, go backwards through the last 3 days. Or 4 days, I think it was. Something like that. So they were backtracking through the days, and of course they went to the site of the investigation, and the investigator's kind of looking around, checking stuff out, and he goes, well, I don't really see anything. And then the lady goes, wasn't he the one that crawled under the house? You know, the lady that owned the home. She said, oh, that's right, he crawled under the house. So the investigator, head to toe, Gore-Tex suit, you know, snood on his face, taped up, nothing getting in, gloves. He takes a sample thing and starts crawling under the house. The story that I was told by the wife is his feet disappeared for about 2 seconds, and then he came backing out. In his little sample cup, he had these little tiny spiders that are called St. Anthony spiders. Most people see them in their gardens. They're those little itty-bitty quarter-inch spiders with the little stripes across the back, the little yellow stripes. The one thing about spiders is all spiders are venomous. But there's only, like, the black widows and the brown recluse that can really do, you know, kill you. A hobo can as well, but you have to, you know, not take treatment. So he's holding these things, and he says, I think I found the answer. And she says, okay. And he says, we need to get these checked out. And he was thinking they were even really bad spiders. But the gentleman had been bitten over 2,000 times.
Oh, my God.
That is the equivalent of 3 black widow bites. Because he had been bitten so many times.
What kind of spiders was he bitten by?
St. Anthony's cross. Little cute black garden spiders I used to play with as a child.
Okay.
I'm sure I got bit by one, but... they're clear throughout the entire United States, and you never hear of anybody getting hurt by them. But when you get bit 2,000 times by just hatched spiders,
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
That's an insane.
When they were brushing him off, according to what the guy from the CDC told the wife is, they were probably brushing off just as many spiders as they were dust. But, you know, it was kind of dark, so they really didn't notice. So he did recover. And earlier this last year, I got a phone call from his wife. And I says, so how's Martin doing? And she says, well, that's why I'm calling you. And I went, uh-oh. And she says, he decided this year that he was going to start, you know, doing some 5Ks, nothing major, but he really missed his exercising. That was, you know, kind of his thing. So he started training for some 5Ks. And he wound up having a stroke. And the doctors told him that when he started exercising again, you know, even though they had treated him and gotten him stabilized and everything, the venom was stored in his muscles, started to release again.
Oh, wow.
So now he's now had a stroke. He's at home with his wife, and he can talk and all that, but, you know, he has some difficulties now because of the stroke as well. So some things that we do, you know, we get injured, but sometimes it can reoccur in his case because he originally got bit by the spiders in 2012. He had his stroke in 2015, and it was because of that spiders.
So the venom actually stores it in the muscle? I've never...
Yes, sir.
That's wild. So does it ever go away, do you know, or is it just kind of always dormant in the body?
It can be flushed out if it goes through your circulatory system in time.
Wow.
But it can also be stored in the muscle.
Is there something you can use, like, you know, like, I don't know, whether it's DEET or something like that, where you can put on your skin? I wouldn't use DEET personally, but you can put on your skin before you crawl under places like that to help, you know, prevent that kind of thing?
The best thing to do is to use a full body suit. Contractors wear, tape it down so they can't get into, you know, literally glove and tape. Wear a snood. So you're sealed into it. That's kind of the best thing.
Okay.
Even better is you get a remote control car and you mount a camera to it. And you stay out from going under it altogether and just kind of wing it.
That makes sense.
You know, if you don't have to go under, I would recommend not doing it. It's not necessarily a safe place to be.
I would never do it. I would leave that up to the plumbers. Yeah.
Have you had people die, Elaine, or heard of people die from paranormal investigation?
2012, there were 6. 2013, there were 4. 2014, there were 2. 2015, there were 6. And so far this year, there's been 1 that I know of.
And what is their...
are confirmed.
What is the manner of their death? What sort of accidents?
Well, not all of them were accidents. I tried to convince people not to go paranormal investigating when they're sick. Because you go with a cold, you wind up with something worse. A couple of people have gone on paranormal investigations and one lady got listeriosis, which typically, you know, is a stomach infection. You can get it from water. Those are from Oregon. We got it in a lot of stale ponds and stuff. One lady got that. On top of being sick, she couldn't. Her body couldn't handle both infections, basically. We pneumonia is a thing that people do get. You know, don't take care of yourself, you wind up with pneumonia. One lady wound up with ARDS, which is acute respiratory distress syndrome. And that was a progression of she went to an investigation sick, she came home, and she went downhill from there. You know, that can be argued. Did they get died because they went on the paranormal investigation? Well, maybe it would have happened anyway, but they sure didn't help their cause by going on their investigation.
Mm-hmm.
There was a guy that was electrocuted. There's been several electrocutions. We used to die in some very crazy ways. You know, when I go and I give talks, I don't talk about the guys that, you know, were on there was a guy in Ohio that crawled out on a roof during a snowstorm. It's going to be icy. He fell off the roof. Well, he survived, thank goodness. But, you know, I don't talk about those things because those are common sense things. Like, yo, dude, you shouldn't do that. But we don't think about things like, what kind of mold and mildew were in a room. There was a guy that he did survive this, but he went into an attic with fiberglass insulation. Well, one of his teammates kept hitting the wall and it had a small tear. They didn't really think anything of it. Well, 2 days after the investigation, he started coughing up blood. What had happened was he had breathed in some of the fiberglass. It had embedded in his lungs. Then it got infected. And he wound up losing the lower part of the lobe of his lung. And I was like, I've never heard of this. Well, the more I checked into it, 4 investigators have had that happen. And it's like, why don't we ever talk about this, people? Those are serious.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of talk about it, and I think people need to start talking about it because there are real risks out there. I know somebody whose friend was hit by a car on an investigation walking, you know, on a road. There's just so many possibilities. But I guess everything in life is risky, but there's no point to, you know, put yourself out there in a position to be at more risk. You know, do research and find out what the risks are, like what we're doing right now, talking about it. And we do have a caller. Did you want to take a question from a caller?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
So, all right.
Caller, you're live on Paranormal Horizons.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. So I have a question. Aside from some of the physical protections or hazards you've mentioned, you know, going into old buildings can really expose you to some nasty things, obviously, from what you've been saying. What do you recommend to protect oneself spiritually?
Good question.
That's a great question. And the sad part about it is I don't have the world's best answer for that because I think it really depends on the people. I know that several members of my team have stones that they use. Our team does circle up together, and we do a circle before and after where we talk to who might be there.
Right.
And politely ask them to say, hey, we're leaving, but please stay here.
Home with me?
Yeah, don't come home with me. I would
right, okay, I see.
I personally, and each one of my team is different, and most teams that I know, everybody has their own little thing. I do keep sweet grass and lavender, sage in my car, and I do kind of give myself what I call a sage shower before I even get in my car.
Oh, I see.
So, you know, that's me personally, and that way I feel safe. I do carry stones as well.
Good, yeah.
I think most of my team is into stones.
What kind of stones do you use before you go in?
I like to carry jasper with me.
Okay.
Because I really feel that I'm grounded when I carry it.
That's a good one.
And So I keep that and usually some quartz with me. So, and people go, well, that's an odd combination, but it's what works for me. And everybody would be different in that case. And I think on my team, everybody's different, because I have a team member that as soon as she gets home, she gives herself a black salt bath.
And oh, interesting. Says, like a black salt bath, you
it's
said?
It's a black salt, yeah.
Oh, interesting.
And she says that makes her, you know, she knows that then she's safe. And I'm like, okay, everybody's different. And I, you know, I don't try to, I can share what I do, but my team each has their own ritual, so.
Now, in your opinion, do you think it's possible that some of these more extreme cases you've mentioned could be related to paranormal activity, or were they just more based on not taking care of oneself, careless, going out with a cold, playing around in asbestos, things like that?
There's too many of this world answers as to why it happened the way it happened for it
okay.
to necessarily be paranormal. Yeah, you know, when we go into a one of the things in my pamphlet that I talk about, and I do, you can go to paranormalsafety.com and download my pamphlet. We go into an investigation and our cortisol levels, and I know that you watch on TV, that's the fat thing. It's also your fight or flight hormone.
Right, the adrenaline glands, I secrete that.
It is.
Okay.
It raises. And so, you know, that does funny things to people's bodies.
Sure.
There was a doctor who was on a paranormal team, and when I was writing my pamphlet, he said, remind people to drink water. I'm like, why? And then he tells me about what happened to one of his team members. The lady would get a hangover. I mean, she thought that a demon was coming home with her every time. Because the next morning she would wake up. She had been a drinker back in the day. She says, no, seriously, and I can be puking the next day. And it was like, the doctor was like, oh, that doesn't. So he checked her cortisol level like a week before an investigation, the morning of an investigation, right after the investigation, and then the next morning. And the week before and the morning of, nothing, normal level.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately after that investigation, he said they were three times of what they had been the morning of.
Oh, wow.
Now,
yeah,
cortisol
that does.
Is one of those things that water dilutes it.
Oh. And
so,
it takes a toll,
you know,
on the body, too.
It does. And so
yeah.
We go out and investigate. Well, you know, if we're in a state of we've OD'd on cortisol, you know, I think we do open ourselves to potential paranormal interference.
Sure, that makes sense. Anytime you're in a weakened state.
Right.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Well, thank you.
Cool. Well, thanks for calling in. And did you have any other questions?
No, I don't think so. If I do, I'll call you back.
All righty. Thanks
Good
for calling.
Good question. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Take care.
You too.
Thank you.
So, yeah, that's interesting about the cortisol. I work in a medical laboratory, and that's a pretty common test that we get is blood tests for cortisol. But I never really knew exactly what it was, and now I know. I didn't know that it was associated with adrenaline and all that.
Yeah, it's the stress hormone.
Now, have you run into other instances, different kinds of risks, like legal risks? You know, I assume a lot of people probably trespass or being accused of theft on investigations. I know of one person I know was accused of theft, and it resulted in a big legal thing. Is that something that you cover, or is it just, you know, the physical risks?
I pretty much have confined myself to the, as far as what I go out and typically talk about, is the health and safety part of it. I had been on a team prior to Whoopi that had experienced some legal issues, and they went in and did a cleansing. I wasn't actually part of that group at the time. I was on the team. I just didn't go to that event. And they had cleansed a family's home. And the family actually sued them for causing mental distress.
Wow.
The family won.
Oh. So when you do an investigation, do you have like a waiver that you can have prior to that, after that experience? Would that help you, or does that exclude you from any kind of future liabilities?
That's
the case.
Most lawyers will tell you what our lawyer told us. Those waivers aren't worth the paper they're written on.
Really?
Because as a team, even though you're not being paid, you're providing a service. When you go in and do the investigation, you're not providing a service. When you cleanse the place, then you've provided a service.
Okay.
That's where the liability gets hairy. Now, you can have them sign a waiver saying, we're going to come in here, we're going to investigate, and we're going to tell you what we find. That's not quite providing a service. But when you say, we're going to get rid of your ghost because we're going to come in and cleanse the place, then you've provided a service. Now, there's a way our team gets around it. Because you live in Oregon, and there's this great river called the Columbia. And it's really hard for somebody from Oregon to see somebody in Washington. And so we have a Washington team. Here's a number. Call this team. They'll come take care of your ghost. That sounds really bad, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That's what we do.
It's funny how the state lines work.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, it's funny how the state lines work. It is a lot harder to sue somebody in another state. It's not impossible, but it's just more difficult.
So what you're saying is you got somebody from Washington to do the investigation, correct?
No, we did the investigation. They come in and do the cleanup work.
Oh, okay.
But it's a worked out agreement. They gladly come and do it for us, though. We tell them what we think, and then they come and fix it.
Do you find that that works? Are there instances that you've experienced where the cleansing has actually stopped the haunting?
The one thing about a cleansing...
I'm kind of a paranormal skeptic, even though I've done a lot of paranormal investigations. I always wonder if that sort of thing's works, because I've never... That was never a piece that was ever part of my investigations. I would just go approach it from, a documentation standpoint. So I've always wondered if that works, burning sage and doing all these other rituals.
There's two schools of thought on that. One is, if you do go do a cleansing, reality is, it's a cleansing. You're cleaning a house. Houses get dirty again. So something that needs to be repeated. So if somebody's going to have a cleansing done, they need to learn how to basically clean up yourself, because it would be something that needs to be done over and over again. And as far as does it work or not, I don't know, but I think it helps put the family and people at ease. This burning sage, I burn sage in my house, just to kind of change the atmosphere and energy. It could be all in my mind. And I grant you that, and I have a very good friend that goes, that's just all in your head. But if it makes my head feel better, I'm all for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You have a very refreshing approach to this, Elaine. I like that because, you look at it, in a very, could be a woo-woo thing, and it's like, oh, my gosh, I hear sage, and you're cleansing it. But, you have to have that balance. Is it something that's going to make the person feel better, or is it going to be both? You really have to evaluate it in a very non-biased approach, and I like that.
Well, thank you. I've been teased way too many times over the years. I mean, people go, do you believe in psychics? Well, I have been to many psychics. I have laughed at, but I have two pieces of paper in my drawer. It makes me go, that person couldn't know any of this was going to happen, and it did. And that person couldn't have known any of this was going to happen, and it did. And the way I sit back and go, could I have made that happen because they told me it was going to happen? In neither case could have I. So I sit there and go, I can't necessarily deny that there could be psychics out there, can I?
Now, are there other physical risks that we haven't talked about? Maybe some things that might not be so obvious that could happen paranormal investigating?
Let me see. I've talked about electrocution. That's typically from knob and tube wiring coming undone and becoming, you know, so our team carries a voltage detector, a non-contact voltage detector. We check all exposed metal before an investigation because of that. We have had houses that are apartments and stuff with very high electromagnetic fields. You know, it's the CDC will tell you that they won't hurt you. The World Health Organization says nothing over 0.3 milligrams. Long-term would be the issue there. For a team, this really isn't an issue, but we had an investigation where the lady called us, and she'd given us a whole long list of things that were wrong with her. And just because doing due diligence before we went in to talk to her, we ran all those things through symptom check. And it came back that said it could be heavy metal toxicity. So our team now, we go in like home inspectors. We're bad. We look for lead pipes. This lady had lead pipes. And we said, those are lead pipes. And this is what your symptoms say. Why don't you go get checked? Yeah, we were diagnosing her. We made that very clear. We said, it's a possibility. And she did go get a check, and I knew it took about 2 weeks for the test to come back. And so I call her up about 2 weeks later, and she didn't answer. I started calling her every day for 2 weeks. She actually had gotten her test results back. And her doctor called and told her to get to the hospital and not to pass go. She was on chelation in the hospital for 2.5 weeks. It was that bad in her system. Her kidneys were starting to shut down. Her liver was starting to shut down because of it. So, you know, knowing the hazards of a home can help solve paranormal mysteries that aren't really truly paranormal, too.
Do you happen to know when they stopped regularly using lead pipes? Like, how old does a home have to be? I'm just curious.
They were officially banned from use in the state of Oregon, and it went state by state. So, don't know. In the state of Oregon, it was actually 1969.
But now I'm wondering if the place where I'm at has lead pipes, because I believe it was, I think this house in the 50s. So I might look into that.
The easiest way to tell if your pipes are lead or other materials is lead pipes don't rust, they get white. If you got rust, you're good. Rust is a good thing in this case.
Now we do have another caller that may have a question. Do you want to take that caller?
Oh, sure, why not?
Okay. Caller, you're live on Paranormal Horizon.
Oh, sure, why not? That's always comforting. Appreciate it. Hey, about the lead pipe, you know, it's not as much as, well, lead pipe is bad, period. Lead pipe, just like the lead goblets that were used in the Roman days, was the demise of a lot of brain cells being mutated and people going wacko. but also it's the lead solder that they use to put pipe together. Though the pipe is safe, and some pipes are deemed safe, it's actually the solder that they were using that contained lead in the solder to join the pipes together. But all that aside, that's just a trivial little bit of a comment. I know we're getting to the very end of the show. What I was wondering is, when people are going and doing paranormal events, paranormal cleansings, paranormal investigations, some people are known to use mind or mood altering substance and or drugs. And then, of course, I was always under the influence that you should not be under the influence of any mind or mood altering substance, because then you could yourself be somehow exposing yourself to some really bad things that could happen. But then I've also heard that using mind or mood altering substances or drugs can also invite good things to happen. So I just wanted to know what your take was on that real quick.
My honest opinion is the physical harm that could happen outweighs any potential use of good. Because mind-altering things, they alter your mind. They are dangerous. So I wouldn't recommend that in any way, shape, or form. I know some people that believe that they're psychic, and I think this is a hazard that some psychics deal with that don't necessarily want to be psychic. They become alcoholics to stop that psychicness from happening. So I understand it could work. I just wouldn't recommend it. I think there's too many risks.
Yeah, I mean, there's actually, you know, churches that are built around this. The DMT, which is dimethyltryptamine, ayahuasca, different types of Indian religions and or paranormal India aspects where they're using peyote and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you follow what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, I know what you're saying. I think
okay.
for people that are doing investigative work when they go in to do this stuff, though, I think that it's too dangerous to even consider using those things.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks for calling in.
You're welcome, Jason.
So I couldn't imagine.
Thanks for calling in. We appreciate it.
So, I couldn't imagine somebody out there dropping acid and then go investigating an asylum. It couldn't be good.
It's happened.
Really?
Yep.
I've never heard of paranormal investigators going in under some influence of drugs before, but maybe I'm naive or I don't know.
Let's put it this way. My honest opinion is when I heard the whole story, they were more like paranormal investigator wannabes versus serious investigators. But the newspaper didn't come out that way when it happened.
Oh, well,
Elaine,
the newspaper. Oh, go ahead.
It's all right. I have a quick question. It's all right. Elaine, I have a question. If you walk in, what can you do to protect yourself other than using crystals? Do you find that is protection necessary, or is it your state of mind, your intention? How do you feel about, you know, attracting any type of parasites or entities or demons or anything like that?
I feel that, number one, it is your intentions and state of mind. I don't know how to say this without it sounding really bad. I think the people that I've noticed that I've investigated with that have had the most issues with attachment and, you know, entities giving them a really bad time are the ones that are so closed off, they just like, this is all bogus, and they're going to prove everybody wrong. The ones that have something to prove, I think, in that the state of mind of I'm going to prove something, those tend to have the worst issues.
Oh, really?
And then, yeah, on the investigations I've been on, it's like, I almost wonder in some mental way, it's like the entities are sitting there going, want to bet? We'll show you. Just my own personal observation. I think as far as really just going in open-minded and being honest with the entity. Now, I also believe, you know, in death there's good people and bad people, just as there isn't, you know. So you can go in, and no matter what protection, what stones, what crystals, whatever you carry with you, you know, if I'm walking down the street, as much as I like my jasper and quartz, it's not going to protect me against a guy carrying a knife that's hell-bent on stabbing me. So you just got to be on guard and be aware of your surroundings. And if something feels really wrong, maybe you should leave.
Follow your gut.
It's a warning sign. Go ahead,
yes.
Oh, I was going to say, well, we're almost out of time. We have a few minutes left. I want to make sure you put out where people can get your pamphlet and learn more about paranormal safety.
Okay, you can go to paranormalsafety.com. We're in the middle of updating the website. It's been neglected because life has happened. Out there on that website, you can find the pamphlet that I wrote. It'll go over the basics, like, you know, use the hand sanitizer every hour just to keep the bugs down, you know, general stuff that we've talked about and a lot more. It also out there has the medical forms that it was helped doctors help me develop. Our team carries medical forms with us. There are envelopes that are sealed with a little note on the front saying, in the event of an emergency, give this to an EMT that responds, or in the event of emergency, open it up and tell the guy on the phone as they come in. You know, it's got information like that. Once, in about a month, when we get the website totally finished, it's going to have a lot more information, articles that I've written, podcasts that I've done so people can link in and hear stuff that's gone on over the last few years. And that's paranormalsafety.com. They want to get a hold of me directly, they contact me through WOPI, which is Western Oregon Organizational Paranormal Investigators.
Awesome. Well, Sherry, do you have anything else?
No, I don't. Thank you, Elaine, for coming on board.
Yeah, thank you, Elaine,
for having
sharing
me.
All that. It's been great having you on, and I learned a lot, and you had some great stories. The spider story, really, that's something to think about. That's something of horror movie like. So thank
yes,
you so much for coming on and educating us on paranormal safety.
All right, have a good night.
Thank you
all
for
right.
coming. Thank you.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Well, that was informative.
Yeah, it was. Can you imagine being bitten by a spider 2,000 times?
No, I can't. And I don't like spiders. If I see them in my house, I've got my shoe handy.
Yikes.
They don't even belong outside either, as far as I'm concerned.
You're not a spider lover then?
No.
I don't mind them, but I did wake up one night. It was 3 a.m, and I turned the light on, and there was this huge spider crawling on the floor. And I'll be honest, I kind of had trouble falling asleep after that, because if I just see one of them, like, what's under the bed that I don't know about? I could have a family of spiders. So I'm not a big fan, but I'm not really terrified of them either. So
I'm not terrified of them. Kill them. They just don't belong in my house.
Kill them with fire. So you're going to be taking off the next show, and I think it's going to be just
possibly,
me, right?
Possibly. I might be coming back. I might be on the show. I don't know. I just haven't heard any word yet, but I'm doing a show over in Corvallis. So if you are interested in seeing me doing some readings, come out to Corvallis and to the Mayfair. I'll be there Saturday and Sunday, and depending on the situation, I may be on the show, I may not be. So things kind of are up in the air, to be honest with you. So, but we will definitely have a guest.
Awesome. Do you have anything else other than that?
No, I don't.
All right. Well, I guess we'll close the show. I want to thank our guest, Elaine Davison, for coming on the show, talking about paranormal safety. I want to thank the callers for calling in and posing their questions. And check us our Facebook page on Facebook, Paranormal Horizons on Facebook. And with that, we'll bid everybody adieu, and we'll see everybody next Sunday, 8 p.m. West Coast time. And we don't know who the guest is, and it might be alone, which could be scary. But it'll be a surprise. And with that, I wish everybody a great, fantastic week. Good night, everyone.
Thank you. Take care, everybody. Thank you for your support. Take care.
Okay. Good night.